Right, okay.
As my colleagues already described, Domenico won't be here, unfortunately. He couldn't come, and this is going to be a somewhat biased kind of representation of our work. It's going to be much more technical than it is humanistic, so I hope you forgive me. I'm from the Information Security Institute at the Queen's University of Technology, which sounds a bit strange. I do have a humanities background, and Domenico works at the Department of Italian Studies at University Rome III, which is, as the name says, the third university in Rome. My talk's going to consist of four sections. First is we're going to give some background to the digital variants project, which Domenico started quite some years ago now. Then I'm going to talk about the TEI guidelines and why we chose not to use it for our texts, or try not to use it. Then I'm going to describe some of the features of the digital variants website, which we developed. And then I'm going to describe, I hope, how to make an XML-free digital edition. This is the remake of the website, which was founded in 1996 at the University of Edinburgh by Domenico and his colleague Jonathan Usher. And it was rather unusually an attempt to publish on the internet the writers' drafts of modern works. These were modern works which had been published, but the writers had saved their drafts from a very early stage, and they gave them to Domenico, and he's got an amazing collection of these things. They're basically typewritten sheets with lots of handwritten corrections or just scribbly things. I joined the project in 2004, and since then we've been trying to represent these texts online. The idea was to try and represent the way that texts are actually written in reality. And early on, he sent me this text, because I boasted to him, having worked on the Wittgenstein edition and lots of manuscripts, that I could encode anything in XML. So he said, okay, you code this, you know? And tried, honestly, for 2 months, and I couldn't do it. And this is Valerio Magrelli. He's a modern poet, Italian poet. He calls this Campania Romana, the Roman countryside, in a later draft. This is the first draft. As you can see, it's very sketchy. And there are three further drafts and a printed text. It's just one page. The text we're kind of working on at the moment is this much longer text, a 53-page prompt book intended for recitation in the theatre. It was composed in the 1920s and performed up to the 1930s, so it's accumulated over time a great number of corrections, not just by Petrolini, but also by actors, directors, who knows else. We don't really know who's responsible for all of these, although there are definite layers of colour and handwriting which we've been able to discern. It's in a standard Italian and Roman dialect. I didn't know there was a Roman dialect. There is. And there's sort of corrections from one to the other. And there are multiple internal revisions by various agents. We wouldn't even attempt to try and work out what single author or intention there was here, because there are revisions by the author mingled with everything else. Oops. So we tried to represent this, and also the Magrelli. And the obvious way to go is to look at the TEI guidelines. People may not have heard of it. It was first planned in 1988. It's maintained by a syndicate, even to this day, of mostly US academic institutions. It's based on XML, and last time I looked, there were 519 tags and thousands of attributes in the scheme. And according to the authors, it's a coding system of choice for digital humanities projects worldwide. We have some problems with it. One is we didn't want to create software just for digital variants. We wanted to create general tools that we could use in other projects, because we had a lot of variety of texts. We had colleagues who worked with printed texts. We'd also worked with classical texts. We worked with inscriptions. We had a great variety of stuff, and we wanted to have some general tools that we could reuse. So interoperability was a major objective. Sid Bauman, who's one of the editors of the latest version of the TEI guidelines, made a presentation at Balisars this year, and he describes that the TEI guidelines is difficult for interchange, even though that's in the title, and he reckons that interoperability of TEI texts in general is impossible. That's his description. Also, Susan Schreiberman wrote a very nice little piece in Yearbook for Digital Philology, 2010, in which she describes much the same problems that Sid was talking about. She comes to slightly different conclusions, but she does point out that there's very little general TEI software. That's software that we can load TEI in, do something with, save it out, give it to someone else, and they can do something with it as well. And also, I'm not quite sure what the words are in the TEI guidelines. As I read it, interoperability was a goal from the very beginning. That is to say, they had coding conventions for various applications would be devised, and they eventually abandoned it in the latest edition. And I think the reason is that you can't interoperate on the basis of a set of subjective tags. You can interoperate technically, but subjective tags are just not a very good basis for that kind of operation. And the second problem we had was overlap problems in XML. We found that we couldn't represent our text at all in TEI XML, well, not very well. And we tried for some years. It's not that we just discounted it. We put our experiences in DHQ, Digital Humanities Quarterly, last year, and we published that. We found, in fact, no satisfactory encoding in XML of Magrelli's poems, and likewise for Petrolini. And the basic problem is that variation, textual variation, overlaps with the formatting structure. It's very frustrating to get around that. So what we did was we thought we'd eliminate all of the markup relating to textual variation, and that would simplify the problem. We'd just leave the basic markup of the structure, you know, lines and paragraphs, that sort of thing, and automate the textual variation. So I developed a tool to create what I call multi-version documents. And what these are is that they merge all the versions of a work into one thing and eliminate all the redundancy of the copies. And what it does is it computes the insertions, the deletions, the variants, and the transpositions in a set of texts. And the advantages of this approach is that it's fully automatic. It's much more expressive than embedded markup because it does transpositions and it allows the variants to overlap with one another. And it reduces the remaining markup to the level of simple structures. So it's easier to edit. And the drawing at the bottom is a kind of illustration of what it produces, just to have a simple example text. I have much more complex drawings if you want. And basically, you just follow, instead of a linear text, you have this text which branches and rejoins. So you can follow any path label A, B, C, or D through the graph, and it'll give you the text of that version. So some of the things we decided to do with this, we put all our text into multi-version document form and then view them in various ways. So one of the views was obviously this compare view, where you pick two versions, whichever two you want. There's a menu at the top there. You just pick one on the left and one on the right, and it retrieves from the multi-version document the differences that are already computed between those versions. And the stuff on the left in red is what doesn't appear on the right, and the stuff on the right in blue is what doesn't appear on the left. And in addition to that, there are also, although not in this example, transpositions, which are in grey. And one of the features of this display, there are quite a few people who have tried this sort of side-by-side display, and very often if you try and use the software, you immediately get lost. You don't know where you are. You scroll down one side and say, oh, where's the text on the left that corresponds to this? And because the texts are different, very, very difficult to find. The solution we found for this was to automatically sync the two sides. So as you scroll down, the central line in the two displays is always aligned. It doesn't matter whether the texts are extremely different or not. And if I get a chance at the end, I'll show you this. It'd be much better interactive. And at the bottom, we've got some search boxes where you can search one version or all the versions in the MVD at the same time. And another feature is, with this display, we decided to use a character-level granularity of the differences. So, for example, the word subito with an extra B on the left at the top there, you can see at a glance that that is, in fact, different. If you were to highlight the whole word, which is normally done, you'd have to sort of stare at it for a few seconds before you realise there was an extra B. So I think this tells you at a glance what the differences are. It's very elegant. Another view we developed was a single view, which is just originally simply just a reading text of a particular version. But someone suggested that we add an apparatus at the bottom. I was against the idea because it tends to be rather confusing. Automatic apparatuses tend to include a lot of noise. So we had this feature where if you took a selection, it would give you the variance of that particular selection. So it would kind of reduce the clutter a little bit. Also, if you don't select anything, you scroll down, it'll do with the variance of the middle third of the window. And what this gives you is a vertical slice through the versions in the document, which is not what you get in the side-by-side. You've just got two versions at a time, whereas here you've got all the versions if you want them other than the one that's been viewed. Another view we devised was this tree view, where you look at the distance between the various versions, see how different they are, how closely related one particular version is to another. And this is quite useful. I think this is the only view I've seen where people have been able to generate this dynamically from the original data. There's a lot of offline methods. You have to run through a certain process, and then you get something at the end of it. But this is actually built into the MVV format. And it's also interactive. You can change the way that the graph appears to some extent. And the other view which we devised, which didn't work, was edit view. And this is something that the Web 2 user nowadays expects to be able to edit what they see. Of course, we have to ensure that only privileged users can do this. Otherwise, the text will get damaged. And we wanted the interface to be simple and intuitive, but the problem immediately arose is that because we still had light XML in the text, if the user made one mistake and committed it into the MVD, we would no longer be able to read that document because it would be corrupted. So obviously we had to, in some way, check the XML before they pressed the commit button. So you check the XML, and then what do? You have to say, oh, this is a mistake here, highlighting it. And then you say, oh, what you should have done is... And before you know it, you've got an entire XML editor in the browser, which is a lot of work. And we didn't want to do that because we wanted the simple, intuitive interface, and it would have required a very tech-savvy user to use it. So this was counter to our... We basically stopped at this point. Development just halted because we couldn't proceed any further with our nice, easy-to-use website. And so the solution, after a lot of thinking, is to get rid of all the embedded marker, and then we just have an edit box with text in it, and all the problems go away. So the usual way to do this is a technique called standoff markup, which was invented... I noticed there's some linguists around here. It was invented by linguists in the early 1990s. There was a thing called the tips-to-document format, also MULTeX, which the American National Corpus uses, or a derivative thereof. And this technique is where you just run through the XML text, you take all the tags out, and you remember where they are. You record the offsets or the positions in the text. And you can take the same text, you can mark it up in different ways, and then you end up with a whole set of different markup sets, but the same text. But to date, it hasn't much been used by humans. There have been a couple of attempts. Phil Berry in 2000 used it at ADFA in Canberra, the JITIM, the just-in-time markup system, and lately I noticed that CATMO have been trying to, in Germany, get this idea taken up again. It has some advantages. It allows you to have one set of markups swapped for another, and it reduces the confusion of the embedded markup. You can just see the text. Disadvantages, though, are quite distinct. In humanities, markup is manual, not computer-generated, so maybe it's the wrong kind of tool for humanists. And the markup is still a tree. We've got all the problems associated with overlap and hierarchies. And the markup sets can be exchanged, but you can't mix them, and you can't take out part of them. You can't split them. So we devised this alternative to standoff markup, which we call standoff properties. And in this technique, there's no hierarchy. There's just properties that describe text ranges. And so you can overlap. The properties can arbitrarily overlap. The sets of markup can be mixed or they can be split. It doesn't make any difference. And overlap is no longer a problem. There are some precursors. It's not entirely our idea. There's a thing called LMNL. I don't know what it stands for now. Liminal markup language or something. Manfred Thaler has been talking about this extended string model for years. I think it's the same thing. Semantic annotation, RDF, basically works on the same principle or a similar principle. And we've devised a technique for converting this reliably, I stress reliably, into HTML. Even though you've got the overlap, it works out which properties have to be split and how they have to be arranged in the HTML. And it converts all the XML markup to JSON. So there's no XML left. So this is what an XML-free Pepe, Apollo, and other DB text would look like. We're very, very close to getting this working. I was hoping to get it ready for now, but we haven't actually got the service working. I can show you the website, though, which will look much the same anyway. So on the left, your left, there's a database. This is an Apache database, which we're using, which doesn't have any XML in it, doesn't understand XML, which is good. We just put the... markup, the standoff markup, in JSON format and text and also images if we want. And it communicates with a web service, which I've written and haven't finished yet, which is basically an implementation of this merging program and all the things it does exposed on the web. And then you can write a custom web application, just an ordinary one that lays text out on a page somehow, and then it communicates with the browser. So the advantages of this design are that it facilitates interoperability and reusability, which was our goal. And it saves work by automating a lot of the process of editing these texts. And it simplifies searching and evaluation of variants. And it also increases the expressiveness of markup because it allows overlap. But there are some potential disadvantages. One wonders whether digital humanists will accept a non-XML approach. I think they might if we provide easy import-export tools. So they don't feel locked in. They import it in, they don't like it, they can come out again. And the other question is, will standoff properties be confused with semantic markup? I think these should both be able to coexist as they do now, or somehow to merge. And the other drawback is it's not yet complete. And future work, we want to continue our development with our partners in Chicago, because we're not doing this alone. And we want to complete the web service I talked about, the humanities, resources, infrastructure and tools. And we want to add an export facility to the import facility that we've already got. And in conclusion, I think it's this is intended to be a general set of tools. I stress general for data sharing in the digital humanities. Whatever kinds of text you have, it doesn't really matter. It's intended for everything. And it aims to overcome problems with markup structure in real-world texts. And what I want to do, if I get a chance, is just go to the website briefly. Out. What's that? No. This is the website. So in the text tab, we've got some Italian texts. I don't know how fast this web link is. Oh, that's pretty good. And we could show you some of the Petrolini. I think you only got Act 1. With the new web service, this will be a bit faster because it's not working. Okay, here's the single view. It takes a little while to stabilize in the window. There we go. So we've got the apparatus here, which if we click in it, and probably no variance in that section. And it's not going to show anything. Oh yeah, here we go. Again, the whole point of doing this web service is to speed that bit up. And if I just click in there, it should just update. It's not the greatest server in the world. There we go. That's just the central third of the page. So you can click another version and have a look at version C. Okay, and it's also recomputed the variance. That's good. Now, if you look at compare view, actually, why don't we go back to texts? I'd like to show you this other text, because one of the brilliant things about this merge tool is that it's able to merge very different texts. Not totally different, but we've got to the point where we merged two versions of text that were just like 20% similar. And it's going to... Yeah. Thought this would happen. Oh, here we go. Right, so if we look in English, this is a text that I got given by Paul Leggett, Creek of the Four Grays by Charles Harper. And this, he only gave me three versions. Two of them are almost identical, and the other one is a massive revision by the author. So what I'm going to do is try and hit compare, if it comes up. Okay, so we've got two. Now what I'm going to do is choose the Sladen text compared to the first text. And what it does is it goes off and fetches all the differences between versions 1 and 3 and displays them eventually. I started through the sync scrolling, which is quite impressive. Well, I think so. here we go. This gives you some idea of what revision really means. This guy just went through it and completely changed the text, but it did not fail. It aligned it correctly. As I scroll down here, notice the other side is sync scrolling. The redraw is a bit... Oh, it's quite up to date. So you can see here, the central line, wide gaze of heaven, wide gaze of heaven. Okay, it's not exactly aligned, but it's pretty close. Similarly, if I scroll this one, the other one scrolls across as well. So you don't get lost. You just run your eye across nulla nulla, and there should be nulla nulla somewhere. I can't find it. Oh, no, nulla nulla. Oh, it's up there, damn. It's got to be smack in the middle. The problem is these are so different that even if it's one line further up, it's like there's a big insertion and it can't do anything. There's a transposition here. Pause to space. They're on a space, they pause. So flipped around to the other side. Anyway, if you want to, you're interested, you can have a look at that tree. Won't be very interesting if it comes up at all. Nah. How many time have I got? Probably time to finish. Yeah, I'll stop now. I'll stop. If anyone wants to ask any questions, we'll give some time for that.